It's a football Friday. It's an FR Friday. Oh, yeah, it's a Cavs home opener Friday. So we get not just the Cavs regular season home opener, we also get the dreaded J.B. Bickerstaff revenge game, which would be more impactful if the Detroit Pistons weren't stink on crap. And I mean, listen, they're NBA players. So there is the credible threat anytime you suit up in an NBA game that you can lose this game. The Cavs' job is, quite frankly, to not screw up tonight. So we have more on this game. When Spencer drops by, we're going to talk about Darius Garland tonight. We're going to talk about Evan Mobley, his impact, sustaining the momentum. We got plenty on the Cavs in today's show. But obviously, as it's a football Friday, we start actually with the Friday injury report brought to you by Slater and Zurs. Experience you need, results you want. Visit SlaterZurs.com to get your free consultation. Wyatt Teller, questionable for Sunday's game. Jerome Ford, Ronnie Hickman, Jordan Hicks, and Jed Wills are out. And all with various injuries, of course. The Friday Injury Report brought to you by Slater and Zurs. Experience you need, results you want. Visit SlaterZurs.com to get your free consultation. But we weren't going to start with Jed Wills, but I realized something, because this week we've had a lot of conversations about Kevin Stefanski. And in fairness, if you've listened to this week or you've listened to the show the last 7 weeks, you might think I'm overly weighting the blame for this disaster, this albatross, this Led Zeppelin, not the band, but like an actual airship made of lead, going down the way that it has. You might think that disproportionately I blame Kevin Stefanski. And the truth is, I don't. We just have not had the point to have the Andrew Berry conversation. But Jed Wills being out, and the timing of this, where this is happening, he has played the last couple weeks, he has played poorly. There was the latest video of him letting a defensive player, and an elite one in Trey Hendrickson, unabated to the quarterback. And then looking at everybody else and putting his hands to his side like, why didn't you guys get that guy? What happened? I refuse to believe that Jed Wills is simply injured. I tend to believe, call it conspiratorial mindset, call it whatever you want. There's a part of me that just refuses to believe that this isn't part of more changes for a completely dysfunctional, completely lost and rudderless 1-6 Browns team. And I'll be honest with you, if they are leaving it up to injury on Jed Wills, that's more problematic than if they're holding him out and that this is a pseudo-benching, a quiet benching, right? Quiet quitting was all the rage there for a minute. I'd like to think of this as a quiet benching, because if they're okay with guys playing and not playing very hard, well, that's probably how you get to 1-6. Hey, it's Spencer German. What's up, buddy?
I'm good. How are you, Nick?
I'm spinning conspiracy theories about Jed Wills. How are you feeling about that?
So what's interesting about it is it's not like this would be the first time you've seen something like this before, right? Like this happens all the time in baseball. Guys, they start sort of not performing up to par, and they just kind of fudge the books a little bit. They write in that they might have a little bit of an injury, and then they spend a couple of weeks on the IL. I think that's kind of what happened with, like, Tristan McKenzie this year. It was like, oh, yeah, the elbow's still bothering him, so let's just say he's on the IL, and then he can go down to the minors and figure something out. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure it happens in football more than we think. But in theory, like, you probably could blame some of this on the knee injury, because he just hasn't looked – I mean – it's hard to say he hasn't looked the same, because the same.
Wildly mediocre this year.
The player that he was before this injury was still not very good either. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if this is kind of the way that they go about sort of putting him into the background, and it certainly is a sign, if that's the case, that they're not going to bring him back next year. But you might as well try something else, because to your point, like, I thought Joe was as bad as he's been since he's been here, since he got drafted on Sunday. I mean, that play you mentioned where he just, like, let Trey Hendrickson right by him.
Yeah.
And we've seen some of those before, but at least we've seen him where then it's like he tries to get back into the play.
Yep.
That was just like, sorry about that, Deshaun. Didn't mean to let – it was bad. It was like one of the worst performances we've seen from Jed.
And Jed, to me, is so much of what frustrates me about the Browns, because – I don't want to sound like I'm the guy that's running down the statistical side of, or the measurable side of grading player performances. But like, if you look at it, there was the ultimate football player in Tristan Wirfs, who was a prodigious high school wrestler,
yeah,
who was annihilating machine at Iowa. And the knock was, well, worst case scenario, he might end up being a right tackle instead of a left tackle. And in fairness, it took the Bucks, I think, 4 years to or 3 years to move Tristan over to the left side. But, like, Tristan didn't have left tackle measurements in terms of the what people tend to think of. And so you go Jed Wills, who has all the measurements and none of the actual heart. And, like, I don't think they have enough football players. Meaning, well, let me put it this way. All the real football players on this team are guys that were drafted by John Dorsey or Sashi Brown.
Yeah.
That, like, that's and so, well, Jed, and that's Jed, why Jed is like the typical, like, this is a dude who has all the talent in the world, but if you don't love the game, this is who you're going to be. And then playing him every week is just pure stubbornness.
Yeah, and you bring it's funny you bring that up, because I think one of the things as we talk about the future of Andrew Berry that you can point to is, yes, he's retained the guys that are the core guys, but if you really think about where those core guys came from, they're John Dorsey era guys. We're talking about Miles. We're talking about, which I guess was pre-Dorsey technically, but Miles, Denzel, Nick Chubb, like, these are the players that were here prior to Andrew Berry. And so, like, I understand that he's been pretty savvy when it comes to trades, and he's pulled off some sort of shockers, if you will. But, like, in terms of, like, player retention, like, it's not easy, or it's not hard to give contracts to the guys that are good. Like, that's, yeah, that's been one of the premier parts of his job. But the talent acquisition through the draft has been a problem and has been a question that we're all asking. And Jed was the first-round pick he had. He's only had two, but he was the first-round pick that he had. And we see how that's kind of gone at this point. So, yeah, I mean, it's a problem. And, to like, you bring up kind of going back and looking at the tape on him and Wirfs at the time. And this is something that people bring up to me, is like, well, hey, he played for Nick Saban, so how can he not be like this tough guy? And it's a fair question, but I also just think, like, part of that is part of the equation there with him is probably that when you're in college, you can get away with sometimes being a little more lazier when you're just physically more gifted than the guy that you're going up against. And mm-hmm. as we know, Nick Saban was always recruiting the most physically gifted players around the country. So I think he probably got away with more in college. And in the NFL level, he gets exposed every single week for those things.
Yeah, and I just think, like, continuing to come back to the point of I think Jed – and like, because I think people give Andrew Berry a pass. Oh, he's only had two first-rounders. Well, that does go out the window when one of them is a top-10 pick, and neither of them are guys that are going to be here beyond the next year and a half.
Yeah.
Like, this is clearly Jed's last voyage with the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, he's not getting an
extension. And I'll be honest with you, I actually think Greg Newsom does have some trade value here going into the break, like, or going into the trade deadline. Like, Bill Barnwell pointed out, like, Arizona needs a corner who can function as somebody who can play all three roles as the top three corners,
yeah,
while also, you know, actually just being a passably good corner. Like, that's a scenario that I think, but so now I'm getting ahead of myself. But my point is, like, you come back to where are the football players that Andrew Berry has drafted? Because the one guy I can really think of is JOK. That's the,
yeah.
And honestly, MJ Emerson is another guy with the right attitude. I just don't know what the hell's happened to him. Those are the two guys, yeah, and one of them is having the worst season in the pros.
And I've maintained, even through his struggles this year, that I think MJ's kind of the future Denzel in a way. Like, they'll pay him once Denzel gets a little older, or maybe he has one too many concussions for their liking, and they can get out from his contract, or maybe the contract expires. Like, they'll pay MJ, and he'll kind of be that future cornerstone player in the secondary. And, you know, like, I think this year he's having some struggles, but, you know, year to year, sometimes those things change, and hopefully he can learn from this one and bounce back and be that lockdown corner. But those are probably the two that come to mind. We know his history with wide receivers. The one that he turned – the one, like, I guess, pick that was a wide receiver that turned into any sort of, I guess, valuable type of player for them was obviously Donovan Peoples-Jones, and he was a sixth-round pick. So you weren't really expecting much. So it was, and that's the thing. Like, the fact that he became a guy that was like, oh, he can go for like 800 yards in a season. Like, that was cool for a six-round pick. But, like, the fact that they have missed on so many of these guys and they've only been able to find those reliable wideouts through trades is an indictment on Andrew. It really is.
Well, and here's the other thing, to bring it back to where the Browns are. With, you know, Jed out for Sunday and DeJuan Jones apparently is going to, you know, slide over there and they're going to finally give him a crack at that. I just don't understand how, like, players sometimes give – everybody in life sometimes just gives you easy wins, layups. And benching Jed should have happened, like, 3 weeks ago. And all due respect to a guy, because, again, I don't know Jed. You know, like, I don't think he's a bad dude. I just don't think he loves football. And, like, Jason Lloyd and I got into this yesterday because he's like, well, they don't have anybody better. And I'm like, better is subjective. Are we talking about better as talent? Or are we talking about somebody who played through the whistle? Because I'll take a C-minus talent through the whistle versus a talent who plays for a second and a half.
Didn't you and I have that debate a couple weeks ago? Didn't we ask, would you rather have James Hudson, who you know is not as talented as Jed Wills, but you know he's going to play hard? Or Jed Wills, who is more talented, but he doesn't get the most out of that talent. I swear I thought I was with you on Afternoon Drive when I asked that question.
You could have, but it's
a lot's happened since then.
That was 2 weeks ago. And in Browns speak, this is like 3 years of our lives that have just aged off us. So Jed Wills is out for Sunday. And I just think the start of this conversation is, do you guys expect the offense to look better? New left tackle, new quarterback, new play caller. Are you expecting better on Sunday from the Browns offense? And there is, Spencer, just so much change here with the Browns. And I do think it feels like the more change that the Browns make, that I think it almost, I don't want to say it raises the expectation for the outcome, because Baltimore has been the everything the Browns have not been. Yeah. They, you know, even when they play a bad game, they tend not to lose. And they're so dominant on the ground game. You know, Keaton Mitchell's going to be coming back here in the near future. With Derrick Henry being the best running back in the NFL, with Lamar being a, you know, top three passer, top four passer. So it's a lot when you look across the field, but I do think whether it's Jameis, now new starting left tackle, new play caller, I think that has given people hope for Sunday for the Browns.
So it's funny, because I do think under normal circumstances, I guess it's normal circumstances, but I do think, like, in general, those things would give you hope in most weeks. But the problem for me is, like, if you block out who they're playing, it's like, oh, new play caller, we've been waiting for this. New quarterback, we've been waiting for this, even if it wasn't the way that we thought we were going to get there. New left tackle. Oh, everyone was ready to throw Jed Wills to the side last year or the year before that even. So these are all things that you're like, oh, this could help spark something. And I do think that's on the surface why they made the decision, because I was kind of curious, like, why did Kevin give up play calling now that you have a quarterback in there who probably is more suitable for your usual system? But I do think it all just centers around the idea that, like, they're looking for some sort of spark from this team. But then the problem is you look across the sideline and realize, like, the other team they're going against is one of the best teams in football, one of the best teams in your division, one of the best teams in the AFC. And they are just – they look like an absolute juggernaut right now. And I don't know how their offense, even with all these changes, can keep up with what the Ravens are producing. And so that's the biggest hurdle for me, because, like, yeah, of course, like, you see all these things changing. And I kind of thought the same thing a lot of the fans did. Like, oh, this is – you know, this is great. And then you realize where you're at in the schedule and you're like, well, this isn't the New York Giants that they're playing anymore. This isn't the Las Vegas Raiders that they're playing anymore. This is the Baltimore Ravens, who are consensusly a top three team in football right now.
But I think what's interesting about what you're saying is, I don't, because I think the easy way to feel 150% better about where this thing is that the Browns win, the offense puts up 30 points, and the defense slows down Lamar, and you get out of here with a win. That is the easy fix-all, and sometimes we think in absolutes. I think there's a fair amount of people just looking for salient on Sunday. Like, I really,
like,
do.
They're just looking for anything better than what we've seen
so
far.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it looking different than it looked with Deshaun, which is, even if Jameis goes out there and has something that is even close to, like, the quintessential Joe Flacco game.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, maybe he has two touchdowns through the air, but he has, like, two or three interceptions. People are going to say, well, he's got two touchdowns, so it was better. Like, I think the bar is so impossibly low for Sunday that your job is just don't look the same. I still don't know they can clear that bar, Spence. I really don't. But I think there are a lot of people going into this game saying, because there's no Deshaun, you know, hanging over our head right now, because that's a decision for another day. Now, you bring him back? Do you trade him? Do you, you know, do you mutually eat some money? Do you post-June 1 him? There's all these paths forward, but you don't have to think about today, because there is football to be the distraction. Well, now the distraction has to just look functional, because I think if you look functional, I think you're going to hear a different – even if you lose – I think you're going to hear something different from Browns fans on Sunday rather than or Monday rather than just scorched earth.
Well, and that's the other interesting part of the giving up the play calling now from the Stefanski angle of this, because I think the main reason for this, Nick, is to just see if these changes can help give you something different, change the outcome in some capacity, make the offense look functional. I think that is at on the surface like what the main point of it is, but I also think too like. At 1-6, I mean, this team, this organization, they know where they're at. Like, they know making the playoffs are a long shot. I know you got Grant Delpit sort of made the tongue-in-cheek joke yesterday. You know that he wasn't gonna approach these games any differently, given how things have gone. Because you know what happens if we finish 11-6? Like that was kind of his like joke at the end of his press conference. Yeah. But we know that's not happening. Like we know what the fate of this team is going to be by the end of the season. They have to start thinking about. Who's going to be here long term? What's it going to look like long term? What players do we want to build around in this next era or phase of this team? And that also centers around the coaching. Like, you got to find out if Ken Dorsey can bring some sort of juice to the offense and be an offensive coordinator that Kevin Stefanski can work with long term, or whatever is going to happen with Kevin Stefanski moving forward. You have to find out if Jameis Winston is maybe a trade chip for you. Or if he can be something that you can bring back as a backup full-time. Or if we get to a point where Dorian Thompson-Robinson starts, like what you have in him. So there's all these different sort of tentacles off of that decision and what kind of has played out this week and where they're at as a team and trying to figure out just like what this thing looks like moving forward. And so, I can understand why just seeing some progress would be a good thing in terms of like getting a read on how this is going to go the rest of the season and what's here to stay and what's not.
But you said something I think is really interesting and worth exploring here as we talk about whether you guys are expecting the offense to look better on Sunday because of all these changes. And I mean, I think a fair amount of it is, even if people don't want to admit it, the thought of just moving on from Deshaun, I think for a lot of people has them watching on Sunday that might have not watched otherwise. But you guys can pitch in. At Nick Wilson says, at Spencito _ on X, social media reactions on X, powered by Scheiben Jewelers, Cleveland's premier jewelry store. But the thing that you said, because I really want to get to this.
No, you're good, you're good.
Because you said, well, we know where this goes from here. I think it's important to know, it's so early in the season. There is a wide variance on where it goes from here. And I think that is why Sunday, we can scoff at things like the playoffs. We can scoff at things like, is there any hope left? Can you, you know, fix the offense in real time, all this kind of stuff. But, like, Sunday can be the beginning because it's post-Deshaun, because there's a clear demarcation here. Sunday can become the beginning of going to be a 7-win team, which would mean you go, 6-4 from here? Or you going 1-9 and maybe having the number one pick. And again, there's a lot of reasons you can spin either which way. It's best for Kevin Stefanski if they're 7-10 and not if they're, 2-15. It's probably better for the Browns if they're 2-15 than if they're – but I think that's what's so interesting is I'm not fatalistic in how this is going to look. They still have enough veterans in that room at any point to spark even a small run that does complicate things, but you know, just to speak to that idea of, well, we know where this is going from here. Yeah. No, I really don't. I'm assuming it's going to continue to get bad, but I don't know.
Well, and to be clear, when I say that, I mostly just mean, like, we know where they go from here is probably not the playoffs, is my point. Like, we know that that's pretty much out of the question, but you are right. There are different sort of avenues and routes this thing can go in terms of where they end up in the draft and what record they finish with, and the veterans being in the room does matter, and not losing the locker room. I want to come back to that here in a second. But I was going to say, too, that's the other thing that stinks about all these changes happening now is, like, last year when Deshaun got hurt and the Joe Flacco signing goes down and all this, you can always sell hope to fans when there's, like, something to still hold on to. Like, at that point in the season, like, they were like maybe a game or two over 500, but you knew, like, oh no, Deshaun's done, like, writing's kind of on the wall, what's this going to mean? And that's what made the Joe Flacco thing so fun, was like he came out of nowhere and then goes on this tear, takes you to the playoffs, but you still had that chance, like there was still the possibility that you made the playoffs. You could sell that. The hard thing right now is, like, all these changes are happening, but it's hard to sell to anybody, oh, guys, it's going to be okay. Like, we're going to go on this massive run now and make the playoffs, because that seems like such a long shot. But to go back to just the presence of the veterans in this locker room, that is another part of where things go from here. Because I've said this for the last couple years now in relation to Kevin Stefanski. In 2022, when things are going south, I said, what happens with that locker room is the key to whether or not they move on from Kevin Stefanski or not. If he loses the locker room, if it doesn't seem like they're playing hard for him, then I think it might be time to find a different coach. If they continue to kind of get the message, they still play hard, you know, that maybe the results aren't there on Sunday, but they're still trying, that speaks to he hasn't lost the guys in that building. And I think, like, this is probably the biggest challenge of his career to date in that regard, because he's got to find a way with a team that has one win, playoffs are a long shot, trade deadline's coming, and there might be more pieces that get moved, to somehow keep these guys motivated each and every single week. And if he can do that, I don't think there's any reason why he shouldn't keep his job. But if he loses them at some point this season, if we see clear evidence of that, then yeah, that goes back into the conversation of what does his future hold, and even Andrew Berry's future hold this offseason.
I think what's interesting is also how bad do you let it get? Meaning, like, if they don't show any fight on Sunday. Because I think the other thing we haven't discussed is the fact that the players have gone out of their way to let fans know, at least one player did, hey, you lost a lot of us on Sunday with the Deshaun Watson situation. I think you add that on the field, and how does it look? I think you add that to, like, leadership, and how does that look? Because we continue to do, the Browns have hit rock bottom. The Browns have hit, they have not. Like, there is a low, it doesn't mean they're going to do it, but there is a level here that they can go to if this offense doesn't react well to these changes, or if Ken Dorsey is worse than Kevin Stefanski, or if .. You can draw up from any of these changes how they don't go well. I think you would – I would imagine that it's going to get really non-competitive really quickly, and that is when all of a sudden Kevin Stefanski's in-season status becomes a real conversation. Because if it looks better on Sunday, we can chalk this up and see – there's going to be a lot of people doing I was right victory dances on Monday, whether it's one game or 10
I knew Ken
games.
Dorsey should have been calling the plays all
or
along.
Or it's going to be more about Deshaun than it is about Ken Dorsey.
No,
but
for sure.
There's going to be people saying, hey, DeJuan looked passable at left tackle, and he actually played for 3 full seconds. Like, this is what I've been saying. There's going to be a lot of victory laps. That doesn't mean that's true, by the way, but it does at least calm the storm for the Browns. If it looks worse or if it looks the same, it means that the vocal minority who said, yes, Deshaun is bad, but it ain't just about him. And if that's the case, that's when more questions, like, think of the tough questions that start to get asked on this. Like, is Kevin guaranteed the season? Should they trade Miles? Guys, that's going into game 8.
Yeah.
Like, imagine the kind of questions. The longer you lose, you turn 5 losses into 6, 6 losses into 7, 7 losses into 8 off the bye. That's when all of a sudden the questions that you're starting to ask are deeply penetrating the foundation of this roster and this locker room. And by the way, we should be asking them now. This is abhorrent. This is embarrassing. I think that's part of why the players have continued to pound this drum of acting as if every Cleveland fan was cheering Deshaun's injury. Because
right.
I think it changes the conversation of what an abject failure and embarrassment is for a locker room that has pounded their chest and said, we don't really need leadership. This is a player-led locker room. Then where did you guys fail? Because we're not going to do the revisionist history. We're going to do the revisionist history that if this thing goes to 2-15 or 1-16, we're not going to do this, it changed the moment that Deshaun's injury got cheered. Nah, blow that out of the water. No. There's a veteran locker room, and it is wild how quickly they are to point the fingers externally, and yet I never hear. The most we get pointing back at them is, I just got to play better. Well, no bleep, Sherlock. You have to play better.
I mean, you're spot on. Like, we should have maybe been talking more about the fact that this team had just lost another game and they were 1-6. And what was the conversation after Sunday? mean, we spent 3 days, the better part of 3 days, like talking about the dynamics between the fan base and the team now, and are they going to kind of rally around each other? And we were still asking guys like Nick Chubb about his thoughts on it on Wednesday. Like the fact that they dropped to 1-6 was basically a footnote in that game. Nick Chubb returning was basically a footnote in that game because it became this war between players and the fans. And I do think on some level, like, it was warranted for them to say some of the things that they said. And I think that the fans were right to get defensive and say, like, it wasn't all of us and that doesn't speak to all of us and you can't put it on all of us and that's not how we feel about you guys. But, yeah, like, I agree with you. Like, it can't just be about that, and that can't distract from the failures within that organization and how bad this team has been.
If it looks better on Sunday, even marginally better, like it just looks functional, is your main takeaway going to be this was all on Deshaun? Or is it still something other than that?
I will never, and this, again, I'm not trying to be some like Deshaun sympathizer here, which I know people get lumped into that box, but I will never look.
You didn't call him an awful person, an awful football player. You love Deshaun,
didn't do it,
just
you didn't
admit
do
it.
Or you didn't do it enough. No, like, I think Deshaun, when he was out there, was bad. I thought there were some signs on Sunday that he was looking a little bit better, but the sum of its parts, everything we saw this year in its entirety was a bad football player and bad football that was being played, bad quarterbacking. But I will never look back on this year and say it was solely on Deshaun. Unless, like, Jameis Winston's, like, lighting it up and putting up, like, 40 points and 400 yards a game, like I guess, like, kind of like Joe Flacco did last year, that's the only way I guess I would feel that way. But there was clearly more problems than just Deshaun with this team, and I think those things are still going to be present. But I think we'll be able to safely say if things look better on Sunday. Let me put it this way. We'll be able to safely say if the quarterbacking looks better on Sunday that Deshaun was a bigger part of the problem than maybe we were letting on through the first 6 weeks of the season.
We are live from the Clevelander here in downtown Cleveland ahead of the home opener. You guys can stop by. Again, big thanks to our friends at Mick Ultra for having us out today. So I will tell you, before we get into the home opener, I think TikTok is finally having diminishing returns for me. Because I've stumbled down a rabbit hole that I don't know it's healthy in any which way. That there's this couple show, this therapy show, where basically there's 12 couples that go to therapy, and then one gets picked to win. Basically, all the therapy is free; the other 11 still have to pay for it. But basically, they film every therapy session, and somehow there are accounts that have made these like clips from these sessions on to TikTok, and it's so fun. It is so fun because these people are usually, at least one of them, is just awful.
So you're just like down this rabbit hole now of this being your TikTok your muse.
Yeah, like my muse is whatever cap cut thing that I can turn into a way to make fun of the Browns usually tends to be. So it's what's weird about this is, I'm making no content on this. All the content on my TikTok, and Nick Wilson says, is
TikTok
is funny stuff, goofy stuff, dad jokes.
Did you ever redo that one video that got flagged, by the way?
No, and I'm still upset by it. I'm not ready to talk about it. But yet, when I am on TikTok, if you go through my algorithm, the number one thing you're going to see is just really, really dumb people in therapy together. And here's the thing. There's always like somebody that you're like, well, this person's reasonable, right? Like this person, I can see like what a lovable human being. And if that is the case, the other person's a monster. The other person's like, well, yeah, no. I know they say they want quality time together. I just don't want it.
It feels like it kind of falls in line with like back in the day, like Dr. Phil's show and like Dr. Oz, like all these people who are like the self-help people on TV. Like it's that kind of thing, only in a TikTok channel.
Yeah, they're like the boring version of Catch Me Outside, girl.
Yeah,
that's the non-trash
moment
of that.
It was a famous moment from Dr. Phil's show.
Like it's the highbrow version because none of these people are like, you know, trash. They're just, but they're like highbrow.
What are you saying about Catch Me Outside, girl, Nick?
I think she's said everything about
that
herself.
To be
said.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of funny.
She nicknamed herself Bad Baby and then didn't have the common courtesy to spell bad properly. I'm gonna put an H there.
Was that like a handle thing though? Because people would like create their like instant messenger handles, and they would like they purposely spell words wrong. Like
no, she's just an idiot.
Okay.
Yeah, she's just dumb.
No, what I was gonna say though was there is something to be said for like those types of shows back in the day, and like I guess this lane of TikTok that you have found yourself in now, or this rabbit hole. Is it just that like we as a society and as people like we like finding people that are like we all because none of us are perfect. We all make mistakes, especially in like marriage.
Yeah.
We all you know we mess things up sometimes. We get into little tiffs, but why do we find so much joy in other people just being like completely degenerates to each other as like a married couple?
I'll just tell you this right now, because it makes me realize I'm not an awful person.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It makes you
married,
feel better about yourself,
Is that what it is? Aren't there days where you're married and you do something and you see the impact it has on your wife and you think, how am I not the worst person in the world, right? And then you see it because, okay,
then you
I
see
was
somebody who's doing stuff way worse
who's
than you.
Doing things intentionally.
Yes.
Like, I'm intentionally I'm unintentionally a bad husband, right? Like, when I'm a bad husband, when I fail, I actually intended to do the good thing. And it got lost in translation. These people are like, I don't care what's good for you. I don't care. I just want to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
And that is like, I'm so much better than you.
So like I said, it's because we want to find some gratification in like the idea that we're not the worst person or the worst husband or whatever. And there's worse people out there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. No. And honestly, I think it not only is that what we're doing, it works. I mean, if I need a good like, hey man, I'm feeling bad about myself. You just turn on one of these videos and it's like, yeah, I left the kid alone. He's 3 years old. He should be able to fend for himself. Why are you jamming me up here? And it's like, I've never done that. I'm so much better than you.
I can't wait to jump on Facebook after the show and see just how they heard out all this conversation that we're having. And every video that pops up on my feed now, because it's usually like parenting stuff, like people doing goofy stuff with their kids, or like parenting is like, and then they play like some video clip from like a movie or something. Now it's just going to be all these married couples who are like going through bigger problems than any of us could ever imagine, and it makes me feel better about myself.
I actually think that we should do this, but with the Browns. Like, I
couples
will,
counseling with the Browns?
Yeah, but it's like,
dude,
Jimmy Haslam and Andrew
we
Berry.
We might be onto something for a bit here.
Not a for show a bit. No, I really
just
want
– just a TikTok channel.
No. I want Jimmy Haslam and Andrew Berry and Paul DePodesta and Kevin Stefanski to go to couples counseling.
And put it on TV
because I guarantee you it would be the best TV you've ever
seen. Kevin just shows up. Well, guys, you guys know Deshaun was never really my choice. You forced him upon me, and I have tried over the last 3 years to do the best I could. Then you get Jimmy.
Candidly.
Well, Kevin. Frankly, you're supposed to be an offensive coach.
Is that your Jimmy Haslam?
Oh no, I just went with a southern twang.
No, I mean, I don't have a good Jimmy Haslam.
I can tell you right now, I haven't listened to Jimmy Haslam speaking up to try to like master his actual cadence.
I just added
a southern twang, and that was my attempt.
I do something.
Anybody from the south, they all just sound the same when I try to imitate them.
Well, okay, thank you for saying when I try to intimidate.
Yeah, I didn't mean like no. I would say when I try to imitate them, I just add a twang.
Howdy, y'all.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Jimmy Haslam.
I just add a southern twang and assume that that's what they sound like. That's very general. I'm generalizing for sure, but that's what it's going to be.
So I didn't realize.
It can't be worse than trick-or-treat.
So when I lived in Charlotte, I didn't realize how the specificity of the southern accent that you do matters.
Every state really is different.
And how when I like – apparently my stock – is some sort of like Texan kind of thing. They were so quick to call me out on it. Like, you're not from here because you don't have a southern accent.
Like a prospector.
And I was like, okay, but you also don't have one. Yeah, but my pappy had one. Okay. All right. Yeah, sure.
I mean, I do think we all associate like, I do think everyone just looks at – like they use the – like what we imagine a Texan sounds like is the voice that we just associate with all the southern states. Alabama, Mississippi,
well, no,
maybe
you
not Florida because Florida's
like
got a lot of
southern dandy, like, I do declare today's a beautiful autumnal day
if
in
you
Ohio. Wanna,
if you want to imitate somebody in Florida, you just put a red hat on and that's about all you need
to this close to the election. How dare you? What's your favorite southern accent? 216-474-0092. But no – I think, because here's the thing, I think I might have stumbled onto a real point here. we give organization in sports too much power, to, and we act like everybody has logic and everybody acts non-emotionally, and that decisions are made with the best intention, and everybody's trying to win. And the reality is, we could dispel that notion with 5 minutes of Jimmy Haslam and anybody that works for him in a room with a licensed therapist.
There's probably some truth in that. I will say, like, I've never blamed him for trying to go get an upgrade at quarterback. And to me, that does speak to somebody who does want to win. Now, we can debate all the live long day whether or not they went after the correct quarterback or made the right choice there. But I think that was at least a statement that they were trying to get this team to a point where they were winning. Because they got sick of losing for so many damn years. I mean, they were 1-31 in two seasons.
Yeah. But they had one bad season, which was 8 wins, coming off a year previously where they had 11 wins in the playoffs. And they went, we're never winning with this guy.
So that speaks to what you said, that these decisions aren't made emotionally.
Yeah.
You can say it was an emotional decision, yes.
Well, and that your process might be crap.
Yeah. Well, and I think this organization has kind of done that to themselves over the years. As the Haslams have owned it, it's pretty obvious that they can have emotional reactions to a lot of different things. I mean, we're talking about the owner that allegedly took advice from a homeless man to draft a certain player in the draft.
Well, but again, I think logic isn't – logic and process and you know, the analytical method, those are great if your analytical method actually is applicable. And so, like, even like, because, well, they're super smart. Well, then they've made some dumb decisions for smart people, respectfully. But, like, if the end result
too.
Is still a dumb decision and it's obvious it's a dumb decision, I'm not like, well, it was made with logic and processes and theorems, like, dumbass decision is a dumbass decision, no matter how smart you are. And my personal life shows pretty much all that.